This hour by Frederick Remington, fully cooked, ready-to-eat bacon. Exclusive, no refrigeration, 10-year extended shelf life bacon. The thickest media center-cut bacon in the industry at fullycookedbacon.com.
Welcome to the Cullen Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies' profile. Now, the Cullen Economics Report.
Welcome in. You are listening to the weekend edition of the KE Report. I'm your host, Corey Fleck, for the first hour. And this first hour, we're going to talk a fair bit about commodities and not just the precious metals. We're going to dive outside of the precious metals to talk about a lot of what's going on in some of the base metals, as well as don't forget about uranium. I'm looking forward to this show, and, well, especially after the pounding that the precious metals took this week, it's good to take a step back and realize the world is much bigger than just gold and silver. That's what I'm going to talk about in this segment with my good friend Chris Martinson, co-founder, co-editor of peakprosperity.com. Fantastic website, and Chris writes, well, as you were telling me, almost the equivalent of a book every week for the website, a ton of good content. Chris, the topic that we're going to talk about is these almost serial bubbles being blown by central banks around the world. We're seeing U.S. markets continue to move higher. I even had a discussion earlier in this week about international markets moving up. Please take us through your initial comments on, again, these serial bubbles and what it means.
I know. I'm just going to only take exception with the word you said, almost. There's no almost about this. These are central bank actions that have led to just serial bubbles all over the place. What's a bubble? Look, a bubble rises is in effect when financial asset prices rise beyond what incomes can sustain. That's it. And every bubble, the premise of every bubble, simple, it's humans wanting to get rich while doing no work. Hey, that's as old as humans themselves. Old story, it's called, I want a free lunch. Nothing new about that. So we don't understand bubbles strictly as monetary or financial things. They're actually psychological things. And I said the premise of every bubble is wanting to get rich without doing work, but the coincident factor that's in 100% of every bubbles, whether they was swamp, those bubbles were swampland at one time or railroads or tulip bulbs or Bitcoin now or whatever you want to talk about, is this: abundant, cheap credit. Every bubble has to have and is founded on cheap credit. It works great on the way up, Corey. It's awesome. Everybody's getting rich. I know people are taking out huge loans against their Bitcoin holdings. That's great. Unless the Bitcoin holdings, for some reason, become worth less than they are or fall below the value of the loan. And then, of course, you're still on the hook for the loan. That's what happens on the way down. Of course, nobody likes the bursting part. But when it does, hey, that's when we find out where the money was betrayed into hopeless projects, and that's been happening all over the place.
Now, Chris, one of the questions I could ask you is that we are seeing bubbles, but they seem to be in more financial assets, because when you look at the ratio between commodities to financial assets, we're at, well, one of the lowest levels we've been ever. Why have the bubbles been isolated to financial assets and not grown over into commodities?
That's a mystery to me, and it's a mystery to a lot of folks who are looking at this. You can plot the exact moment when commodities began a sustained, now 7-year decline. And it started literally 2 weeks after the Federal Reserve announced QE3, which was the largest then moment of monetary printing in any central bank history anywhere. So it was very odd, if not suspicious, to a lot of us that who track these things, that these commodities were trending down at the same time that money printing was ramping up. That's never happened before in history. Money printing has always led to a nice sustained commodity rise. Secondarily, also, negative real interest rates have also been very commodity favorable through every period of history I look at, except this most recent one. So it was actually very much favorable for central banks, though, who wanted to be able to print like crazy but didn't want the price of bread and milk and gas going up. In particular, huge geopolitical pressure all over the world in 2011, particularly, remember, this is the Arab Spring. This is when wheat prices, therefore bread prices, were skyrocketing in Egypt, leading to all sorts of unrest called the Arab Spring. So these commodity price rises we'd seen up through 2011 were very diplomatically and politically problematic. So it was either the most amazing coincidence ever or something a little bit murkier than that, that those started to really go down in concert with the rise in massive amounts of printing. Now, as you said, that printing, where'd it go? It went strictly to financial assets. Here's the thing, Corey. You can't print reality, however. There has been extraordinary destruction in the commodity space because the prices have been too low for too long, and I'm speaking specifically about oil. Boy, we're going to hear that story play out over the next 5 years.
Now, Chris, we have started to see some of the, well, base metals perform better this year, and even oil is trading up close to the highest part of the trading range that it's been in this year. Plus, you go the whole way back, look to 2015, the last time it was in this level. Are we starting to see some of the money filter out, or at least some of the money finally filter in to some of the commodities?
Maybe. It's very spotty at this point. I can't say it's a sustained commodity play at this point in time. It's not including grains at this point in time, other softs, fibers, things like that. We're seeing it in some of the metals, not all. And I still think it's way too low, because here's what my definition of too low. When the price for the commodity is at or below the all-in cost of production, it's too low. And so that's what we're starting to see, of course, in silver. We're seeing that in a number of other base metals. We're very close to the cost of all-in production, if not below. Same thing with a lot of the grains. Very, very difficult to make a case for those at this point in terms of being a producer of those, and so on. But oil in particular, this is a key one. I know we're at a level that we haven't been at for a while. We're still $20 or $30 away from the number that's going to make sense to resume a robust deep water and ultra deep water program. Probably the oil sands is, I hear the correct term from the people up there in Canada. I still call them tar sands because it's bitumen. But at any rate, we're still not at a level of oil price that's going to support the kind of renewed investment we need to see in those industries.
Okay, so Chris, talking about how these bubbles are blown on this money that has been created and made available to the big institutions, if we see a change in policy from the central banks, which we are starting to see, and potentially a pullback in the markets, a popping of these bubbles, does this money that has been created, does it just get destroyed or does it go somewhere else?
Well, we saw a little bit of it get destroyed for the ECB this week, and this is this is such a big, giant mess right now, Corey. We have to focus on little fragments that we can wrap our minds around. So here's one. Junk debt in Europe. They like to call it high yield, makes it sound fancy, but it's junk. And this is debt of really poor prospect companies. This is like loaning money to your Uncle Vinny, who's never paid money back ever. You give him another 20, it's gone, right? That's kind of the quality of companies we're talking about. That debt is trading with a yield of 2% right now in Europe. That's below the 10-year treasury. It's probably a factor of 3 to 5 times lower than it needs to be to compensate people for risk. We've talked about this before. Well, the proud owners of one of those junk issuances that blew up this week was the ECB. They were holding a bunch of debt in a company that the CEO, accounting irregularities, usual junk debt story. He vanished in the night kind of a thing. So even the European Central Bank has got caught up in this. They just lost probably 400 to 500 million euros. It wasn't a huge amount of their portfolio. But to your question, yeah, that money just went to money heaven. Now, when they bought that debt, the ECB printed real money out of thin air, handed it out into the market. That's gone. That's out there. But the debt backing it on the other end, that's also gone. So that's the kind of implosions we're going to be expecting. And it gets to be real fireworks if, or I should say when, in the European case, those losses exceed the income that portfolio is holding in the ECB. At that point, they have to distribute any additional losses to the member states. Can you imagine the ECB handing Italy a bill saying you owe us X billion euros because we lost a lot of money buying bad debt?
All right. Hey, always interesting comments, Chris. Again, thank you for your time, and I hope you have a great weekend.
Awesome. Thanks. You too.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Water is the single most important thing your body needs, so you want to be sure it's the best for you and your family. Since 2005, thousands have depended on Berkey Purified Water. The Berkey Guy provides the lowest price filtration systems in every size. For incredibly delicious water now and in an emergency, get to GoBerkey.com or call 877-886-3653. 877-886-3653. GoBerkey.com.
Message and data rates may apply.
Warning. Texting while driving is illegal just about everywhere. So if you want to take advantage of a life-changing LASIK offer, pull over when you can, because a special opportunity is just one text away. The LASIK Vision Institute is offering absolutely free evaluations and dramatically low prices on high-quality LASIK. Text the keyword CLEAR55 to 350350 to get the benefit of FDA-approved LASIK technology that gives the majority of patients 20/20 vision. For a fraction of what others charge. Text to schedule your free appointment to see if LASIK is right for you. When you text CLEAR55 to 350350, you'll also get an extra 20% discount off our already low-cost services. We've already performed over 1 million procedures. Today, it's your turn. Discover how you can get the quality LASIK experience you've always wanted for a fraction of what others charge. This great offer is just a text away. Text CLEAR55 to 350350. That's CLEAR55 to 350350.
Looking for that edge during those intimate moments? We see many ads for enhancement, but the side effects include death. At GCN Team, we should change the Healthy Body, Brain, and Heart Pack to the Healthy Libido Pack. The brain and heart are not the only organs that require a healthy vascular system. For proper blood flow at the right moment, go to GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203.
This is Dan Pilla. Do you owe the IRS money you can't pay? Are tax debts crippling you? I've defended people from the IRS for over 30 years. I've helped thousands, and I can help you too. I wrote the book on IRS settlement, and I'm telling you, there's no such thing as a hopeless case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX to finally get free of IRS debt. With the IRS's new programs, there's never been a better time to solve your problem. Call 800-34-NO-TAX. That's 800-34-NO-TAX or my website, danpilla.com.
Are you happy washing your hands with harsh chemicals? Are you happy doing laundry with detergents? Are you happy paying high prices? Find your happiness with Pure Soap. These all-natural, earth-friendly Pure Soaps are the very best you've ever used. Buy in bulk. Get a 12, 36, or 48-month supply. Or get items individually and still save big. You're getting soap products twice as good as what you're using now. Earth-friendly and natural soaps. Your family deserves the best. Happiness is 5starsoap.com. Why not put your money up the drain for a change? See them at 5starsoap.com or call 1-800-340-7091 for a catalog. Calben Soap Company can save you thousands of dollars and give you good old-fashioned real soaps that are triple concentrated. Soaps made from vegetable and coconut oils. See their full selection of soaps at 5starsoap.com. That's FIVESTARSOAP.com. Or call 1-800-340-7091 for a catalog.
A commemorative President Trump dollar for only $5? Yes, the historic Trump dollar starts at only $5 at TrumpDollar.us. Choose from our unique three-coin collection in gold, silver, and copper. The Vote Trump Dollar, Inaugural Trump Dollar, and Make America Great Again Trump Dollar. Available only at TrumpDollar.us. Minted in the USA, our Trump dollars commemorate President Trump's patriotic stand. Order your Trump dollar collection today in time for Christmas delivery at TrumpDollar.us. That's TrumpDollar.us.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
Welcome back. In this segment, I am being joined by a good friend, Dan Oliver, founder of Myrmican Research, based out of New York. Dan and I talk a lot about the precious metals as well as the general economies and credit cycles. Dan is one of my go-tos to understand throughout history, what's happened with the commodities and what's happened to credit cycles. And Dan, you made a comment to me off mic before recording that you said, we are near the end of an expansion. We don't know when that exact end will come, but you look back through history, there are some similarities that the markets, central banks, and the economies are experiencing that you think is a bit worrisome. Can you please explain to us why you think we're there?
Sure. So what a bubble really is artificial low interest rates, and we've talked about it many times in your show. What that does is it lengthens the scale of production, so the very long-term cash flows get stimulated, like ships and buildings and all those things. And then what happens is inevitably rates go higher, and all those projects get devalued because there's actually no demand for them. It was all artificial, and they default on their debt, and the banks blow up. And that's the model of a bubble. And in fact, this was explained to the Senate by a speech by a senator in opposition to the Federal Reserve Act. He said, this is what's going to happen. And of course, he was exactly right. And so I view the last decade, really the last three decades, but especially last decade, as just a rerun of the 1920s when, the Federal Reserve kept stabilizing prices every time commodities wanted to fall. Every time the malinvestments wanted to liquidate, the Fed would run out and buy government bonds. They would quantitative ease to lower rates, and that would re-stimulate the economy to quote-unquote stabilize prices. And then what happened was in 1928, when the market was going nuts, the Fed got spooked and said, hey, we have to rein in the market, right? We need price stability, and the market's not being stable. So they started raising rates, and it took 2 years. They started raising rates in the beginning, or a year and a half, the beginning of 1928, and they kept raising rates. And then at some point in mid-29, what happened was the commodities started collapsing because, again, the higher rates meant all these malinvestments had to start liquidating because they weren't real projects. They were all bad investments. But there was about a four-month period when the stock market kept going vertically higher. And so the Fed started ignoring commodity prices and started keeping rates going up to rein in asset markets. And then there was a tension that lasted a few months. And then in September 1929, the market topped. And within 6 weeks, it was 40% lower. And I segment that recently because what we see now is the same thing. The Fed is spooked about asset prices. It's keep accelerating higher so that it's giving them comfort that they can raise rates without any problems. Meanwhile, recently, commodities are absolutely collapsing along with China, which is the main driver of commodity prices and also the locus of the biggest part of the bubble right now. And so you see commodities collapsing. Gold is doing badly, but interestingly, if you look at gold in terms of commodities, it's actually going up, or all the commodities went down in terms of gold, which again is what you should expect to see at the end of a bubble. Meanwhile, the stock market is accelerating its trajectory higher, which again is exactly what happened in the summer of 1929. And it will give comfort to the Fed to raise rates again. And then what will happen is at some point there'll be a tipping point and rates go a little too high and the whole system will lock up and collapse. I did a letter 3 or 4 months ago where I looked at all the sustained interest rates increases by the dominant central bank the last 200 years. And the time frame between when the central bank starts raising rates and when the market crashes is between 2 and 4 years, and it's been about 2 years. In fact, LIBOR has been going for 3 years, and these malinvestments simply can't sustain a rising interest rate environment. So I think the rates are still very low on a nominal level, but the point is they're increasing, and it's the direction of rates that matter, not the level of them. And so I think given the extraordinary amount of debt that is in the world economy now, and because the dollar is a world reserve currency, it's hard to imagine that the bubble keeps going for much longer given the increasing rates. And then the question is, you know, when it falls apart, how does it do it? Does gold get hit initially the way it did in 2008 before it had staged a dramatic recovery when the banks wobbles and or when the Fed starts printing money? Or does gold just go shooting higher because everyone knows the movie, they know what's going to happen, and they'll anticipate the next movement set it higher? That I'm less sure about, but I am pretty confident that we're nearing the end of the cycle, and towards the end we'll start seeing great volatility in a great number of assets.
So, Dan, how do you balance out what's going on in terms of short-term and longer-term rates? Because the short end has been steadily increasing at a better, greater degree than the long-term rates. The Fed, I think, is noticing this. The yield curve is getting flatter. What have you seen through history when, yes, we're in a very low-rate environment, but quite frankly, the short end is moving up quicker?
Yeah, well, the whole premise behind modern banking as a modern invention and the whole shadow bank system and everything else is a steeply rising yield curve. Right? The whole idea behind banking is you borrow money short and you lend it long. And so you borrow it at lower rates and you lend it at higher rates. Well, when the yield curve flattens or inverts, all of those structures that are based on that premise blow up. And they can end up level overnight because they have capital reserves they can draw on and they can, you know, they can push things out a bit. But basically what it does is it completely undermines the entire financial architecture of Wall Street and you don't forget, you have hundreds of trillions of dollars of interest rate derivative swaps that are involved in this trade. And they're all supposed to be all netted off against each other, but in 2008 we discovered that they weren't. And the reason they saved AIG is because of those imbalances, which are much worse now than they were then. So I think that a flattening yield curve certainly is a matter. Again, it's a signal that the expansion we're in draws to a close. And again, the precise timing and the precise sequence of events is uncertain, but I think the general trend is clear. What I'm looking for is what almost always happens near the end. If some minor bank blows up, or in 2007 it was two internal hedge funds at a French bank blew up, and that itself doesn't start the problem, but it's a signal that there are off-size players and two little guys go down. It's easy to save them, but it's indicative that bigger players are coming, and then bigger ones start crashing, and then finally something like Lehman goes down that both brings the whole show to an end. But we haven't really seen that first failure of a little organization yet. And I think that's the signal that I'm looking for, that the end is imminent as opposed to just approaching.
So talking about maybe some of these signals, are you looking domestically in the U.S., in North America? Or are you looking maybe in China, maybe in Europe? Is there somewhere more on your radar than other?
Yeah, I mean, the whole world is pretty connected through the dollar system to the Federal Reserve. I mean, don't forget, whenever the Europe gets into problems, they create huge euro-dollar swaps, and which unite the balances of the two central banks. So I'm not sure it matters so much where it is as long as it involves a money center or gets back to a minor city bank or one of these institutions that is creating all this credit. So, I mean, I've always suspected China will probably be ground zero for big collapse. And they can paper over the little ones for a while, but they'll keep getting bigger, I suspect. But those are big entities. I wouldn't expect one of those to be the first thing to go. I would expect little things. You know, some little bank in Europe to fail. Or in 1931, it was Credit Anstalt that failed in Austria that brought the whole thing down.
All right, Dan, unfortunately, we are out of time here, but I do appreciate you joining us on our show and sharing some of your insights.
To find out more about today's guest, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Non-attorney paid spokesperson. Could your house go into foreclosure? Are you behind on your mortgage payments? Does it seem like the bank has no interest in helping you save your home, and you feel like you have nowhere to turn for help? Then we have good news for you. Foreclosure Protection Services can help save your home as they specialize in foreclosure assistance. That's all they do. If you're behind on your mortgage payments, being threatened with foreclosure, have been denied a loan modification, or been the victim of a predatory loan, it's critical that you call Foreclosure Protection Services now at 800-667-9035. Their network of attorneys and their agents are available to speak to you now. If you're behind on your mortgage payments, Foreclosure Protection Services can help stop the foreclosure process. Call today before it's too late. New laws are in effect and may save your home. Call Foreclosure Protection Services now at 800-667-9035. 800-667-9035. That's 800-667-9035.
Guys, wouldn't your wife or girlfriend love it if you treated her to the very best this Christmas? Well, you can, and you don't even have to go out of your way. We're talking about the world's softest pajamas, available exclusively at Pajamagram.com. That's Pajamagram.com. Created by a team of dedicated pajama experts, the world's softest pajamas are lighter than a cloud, softer than a bunny, like cashmere, only better. She'll love the way the world's softest pajamas feel, and you'll love the way they look. More than a gift, they're a feeling, an invitation to relax a little longer. The world's softest pajamas are available only at Pajamagram.com. Visit today and give her a gift that keeps on giving to both of you. Plus, you don't even have to wrap, because every Pajamagram includes free gift packaging, and Christmas delivery is guaranteed. So visit Pajamagram.com or call 1-800-GIVE-PJs.
Does the current world crisis in North Korea or our domestic crisis right here in America concern you? Well, I know it concerns me. My friends over at Legacy Food Storage have solutions in the event there's the inevitable. What's the inevitable? Civil unrest, a run on your local grocery store. And here's my question to you. If this happens, how do you feed your children? How do you feed your grandchildren? Legacy Food Storage has the solutions. In fact, they can help you implement a simple plan to take care of your needs in the event of the inevitable. By calling them right now, I have authorized them to give you a special 20% discount at checkout by simply using GCN. Call 888-543-7345 or visit them at legacyfoodstorage.com. That's 888-543-7345 or visiting them at legacyfoodstorage.com. Make sure you use GCN at checkout for an incredible 20% discount. Don't be a victim. Take control of your life now.
Hello, Mr. Anderson. The NSA has noticed how much time you spend on conservative news sites. We have no choice but to consider you a domestic terrorist.
Tired of your internet activity being monitored by Big Brother? Get VirtualShield.com, the world's easiest-to-use virtual private network. Browse the web anonymously, leaving pesky advertisers and spies in the dust. Get started today at VirtualShield.com. Take advantage of our free 30-day trial. VirtualShield.com. You have the right to remain private.
Excuse me, sir. Could you take a picture of my family and me with my cell phone?
Sure. Poor Mrs. Anderson. Smile for the camera.
Too bad hackers never get proper permission to access your cell phone or computer camera. Anyone is or could be susceptible to illegal spying. That's why VirtualShield.com has developed Identisafe, a new security software that blocks camera and microphone access from unwanted spies. Get started today at VirtualShield.com. Take advantage of our free 30-day trial. VirtualShield.com. You have the right to remain private.
Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Welcome back. Happy to report that I have Joe Mazumdar. He is Brent Cook's partner over at Exploration Insights. And Joe and I are going to recap a wide range of the metals markets to kind of get an understanding of where we sit close to year end. And I think more importantly, where Joe even sees the interest from investors being, considering it seems like in a lot of these sectors, only a few stocks are truly benefiting, and the rest of the stocks, even with good news, are still, you could say, struggling. So Joe, let's start off talking about the precious metals. This week we saw the precious metals again take a bit of a hit. We can look at gold, we can look at silver that's breaking down even more. It just hasn't been a very good year for the precious metals. Let's get your initial comment simply on that fact.
Okay, thanks, Corey. Thanks for having me. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, we didn't think initially that the gold market would be phenomenal in 2017. We thought it would be more of a sideway market, which, you know, it turned out to be. But, I mean, some would have thought with the volatility in the geopolitical environment right now with the different changes in leadership, especially in major countries like the United States, that we would have had a lot more demand for gold on the safe haven side. But what we've seen is that whenever there's a geopolitical event that drives gold up, it comes right back down, you know, within a few days. And so we're stuck with an environment of $1,200 to $1,300 gold, and we seem to have a hard time breaking that very strong resistance level at $1,300.
So, Joe, what about the relative performance of precious metals stocks? We can start with some of the major companies, and I had a discussion earlier this week that broke down how much some of the largest companies are struggling, like Barrick, like Goldcorp. Earlier this week, they broke to lows for the year. What's your general takeaway from the general weakness in the major companies, precious metals-wise?
Well, I mean, any producer right now would not be doing well because a lot of their assets don't make any sense at these prices. So they've got an overhang of those assets that they bought and wrote off and are currently basically taking off of reserves, such that they're going forward with a smaller, tighter production profile of less ounces that generate more margin under this gold price environment. So yes, they could generate potentially more margin, but we're doing that multiplying it by less ounces, and so in the end they're generating less free cash flow. But that has to be the new norm for these companies if we've got a sideway market in gold. And the people that do that the best are the ones that will, come out of this cycle well with a good balance sheet. I think the other point is for us in terms of investing in the gold sector is that if gold prices stay at these levels, the demand for projects that work at these levels and generate double-digit returns should be even higher. Hence, we've seen a lot more activity on the corporate development side by these companies because they don't have projects and they're really not interested in doing much exploration. And so they're funding juniors, doing joint ventures, earn-ins, and trying to find these projects that work because they know that their pipeline is basically rather dry.
And that's one of the trends I think you can say that we've seen in the last 2 years is the major companies starting to take equity positions in exploration companies rather than buying them out, kind of sharing along in their exploration. And who knows, hopefully we will start to see some more takeouts and some even better discoveries, but now driving down into the junior companies, more of the explorers. Again, there's been a couple that performed very well this year and a couple that performed very well and are pulling back currently, but the wide margin of companies have quite simply, again, been stuck in this tight trading range and are selling off at year end. Why do you think only a couple companies have been able to catch the attention of investors and went through some great runs, but as I said, are still now pulling back?
Yeah, I think in the end, it's due in part to the fact that they're hoping with some of these companies that they generate enough data information to suggest that they're onto something that a major would want, and when they hit that hole that suggests that it's a little bit smaller or hey it's a little bit less continuous. Or, hey, oh, my God, the strip ratio is going to be incredible. People will back off, especially if they've made quite a bit of money on a stock. They don't want to hold it forever, but, maybe they made their lottery ticket return and now just want to bank that return before the end of the year. So we should see a lot of, potentially selling on some of these stocks going into the end of the year. The way we try to look at it is that we want to find companies that are looking for these projects that we think that the majors would want, especially in the gold sector, because they don't have a decent pipeline of projects, and also they don't have district-scale land packages in some of these jurisdictions that we think are good. But also what we're finding is that they don't have the people to do the exploration. So it was before that the majors had big exploration teams and they could do big programs that the juniors couldn't fund. Now it seems like the juniors could do that almost better than the majors because a lot of the personnel that used to work in the majors are now, that's the expertise at the junior level. So there's been a bit of a turnaround there and majors are more confident that there are some juniors out there that can actually do the work as well or better than them and have confidence in their ability and capacity to do the work. And so we'll see more long-term relationships because, as we know, exploration is more of a long-term game than that instant gratification that our people have been looking for over the last 6 to 12 months.
So, Joe, what about the companies that you think are doing good work? I know that you hold some stocks. I even hold some stocks that they keep coming out with news that I think is very positive, and they're continuing to either grow or de-risk their current resource. But the market isn't taking note of them. How do you, first of all, I guess, get settled and continue to hold your positions? And how do you explain to the rest of the market, to the to your subscribers, that this is a good company, but it's just not getting the love from the market that you think it deserves?
Yeah, we have no issues holding companies that we think are doing the right thing and have a project that we think has potential. We have no issues doing that. The problem right now is it's hard to find these kind of companies with these kind of management teams, but the market doesn't always recognize or can differentiate a good management team from a not-so-good management team. You know, we're hoping that our ability is not only finding geologically projects we think might work and bring the goods in terms of a play that the major would want, but also with the management team that could actually drive that interest with the major, because the major is not doing this kind of work, but they need that work to be done, so they need to be satisfied that that junior can do it. So you do need the right people actually doing that kind of work, because they don't want to redo it, and they don't want to look at a project and find out the work is very inferior, such that they just walk away. So that, I think, is something that you have to look at if you're interested in these grassroots exploration programs, because you do need that management team that understands not only how big companies think, but what they want.
Unfortunately, we are out of time for this radio segment, but Joe and I did continue our conversation for about another 10 minutes. We got into base metals, even had some comments on uranium, and talked about some of the energy metals, all with the overall picture of how Joe is looking at these markets, recapping the year that we've just been through, and looking ahead to next year where he and his partner Brent think there might be some value. I will be posting that interview specifically as its own post on the weekend, so please go visit our website, kereport.com. Click on that post. I just want to keep the comments around what Joe had to say a bit more focused here, because we did touch on a lot of different resources, and I did think that he shared a lot of valuable insights.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Want revenge on the common housefly? Well, after 10,000 years, someone has finally come up with a better way. The Bug Assault, a miniaturized shotgun, which utilizes ordinary table salt as ammunition. Non-toxic and no batteries required. So much fun, you'll forget you have a wife and kids. $39.95 and free economy shipping. Use discount code GCN and get an extra 10% off your purchase at BugAssault.com. Makes the perfect stocking stuffer. Get your Bug Assault today.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of My Pillow, and like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented My Pillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. My Pillow will get you into that deep REM sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry My Pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever. You can buy one of my pillows and get one absolutely free.
Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-870-0305 and use promo code GCN. That's MyPillow.com or 800-870-0305 with promo code GCN.
Most people think life insurance pays after you're dead. That's true. But did you know you can have tax-free access to your life insurance while you're still alive? You can use the life benefits of your life insurance to grow your money with certainty and guarantees. No stock market risk, no tax risk, and no penalties. Call Life Benefits if you'd like a free book about how this can be done. Call 702-660-7000. That's 702-660-7000.
Non-attorney paid spokesperson. Could your house go into foreclosure? Are you behind on your mortgage payments? Does it seem like the bank has no interest in helping you save your home, and you feel like you have nowhere to turn for help? Then we have good news for you. Foreclosure Protection Services can help save your home as they specialize in foreclosure assistance. That's all they do. If you're behind on your mortgage payments, being threatened with foreclosure, have been denied a loan modification, or been the victim of a predatory loan, it's critical that you call Foreclosure Protection Services now at 800-667-9035. Their network of attorneys and their agents are available to speak to you now. If you're behind on your mortgage payments, Foreclosure Protection Services can help stop the foreclosure process. Call today before it's too late. New laws are in effect that may save your home. Call Foreclosure Protection Services now at 800-667-9035. 800-667-9035. That's 800-667-9035.
Have you heard the warning from the dead doctors don't lie guy? I'm talking about Dr. Joel Wallach. He says if you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol or high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, or other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. That's what he says. He has a free lecture revealing what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally. And it's all in his free lecture called Deadly Recipe. You want it free? Call him toll free at 855-79-YOUNG. You ready? 855-79-YOUNG. Dr. Joel Wallach, the dead doctors don't lie guy, says there's no reason why we shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there.
Welcome back here to wrap up the first hour of the weekend edition. I am joined in this segment by Chris Temple. Chris joins me on a regular basis, almost on a daily basis on our site, to touch on a wide range of markets, whatever's moving, whatever's catching his eyes, whatever he thinks is important. And as Chris and I were talking this week, he said, you know, on the weekend show, I would like to talk a little bit about uranium. I said, that's perfect considering, well, just last segment I was chatting with Joe Mazumdar, and we even dabbled into the uranium sector at the end of that interview. So, Chris, there has been some big news out of the uranium sector with, first of all, Cameco cutting production and Kazakhstan state-owned Kazatomprom announced plans to reduce their uranium production by up to 20% in 3 years. These two stories from the supply side of the market have, well, again, some uranium commentators very bullish. Where do you stand first and foremost on this supply change that we're seeing?
Well, Corey, the bullish thesis for uranium has not changed for the last few years that a lot of people, including myself, have been talking about the inevitability of what could be, and I've used the term, others have used the term, but once it really materializes in a big way, what could turn into a rip-your-face-off rally for uranium and for that whole sector. The story essentially is that you have kind of an equilibrium in the United States as far as nuclear energy is concerned. We've got about a fifth of overall production in the U.S. Our power grid is juiced by nuclear energy. That's not changing much. In Japan, they took a very big step backwards, as we all know, after the Fukushima Daiichi plant and the meltdown there. And they have been very, very slowly coming back online with some of the reactors. But the big stories continue to be in developing nations like China, like India, and elsewhere, where they've got dire situations with their pollution and one of the best and longest term, most durable ways to deal with that is through nuclear energy. And both of those countries, as well as several others, have got very aggressive multi-year and even multi-decade programs to build reactors. And what everybody knows, including the users in the end, is that there is simply not enough uranium to go along once all of those things start coming online. It's taken a while to get to a place where the market is in balance for several reasons. One is that the reactors have been very slow, slower than anticipated, to come online in Japan. That's number one. And number two, even here in the U.S., the Energy Department has, on and off for years, been selling into the market surplus uranium supplies. That has kept the price depressed. But a lot of things are starting to change in that equation, most of all with the Energy Department. And I've got a piece on my website about this that people could look at. But, you know, everybody that knows me knows that I'm far from the biggest fan of the Clinton family. But I have to tell you, Corey, that this story that has gone around for a while and really been exaggerated in some cases, ridiculously so, by conservatives about this, the whole Uranium One scandal, it's really become nonsensical. Are the Clintons guilty of pay for play in many ways? Yes, including in this particular case. But some of the wilder claims that have been made about, you know, Hillary Clinton was responsible in return for donations to the Clinton Foundation to pack up 20% of America's uranium and gift wrap it and send it to Vladimir Putin, that's a gross exaggeration. Having said that, the story itself has helped to bring more attention to the fact that here in the U.S., when we have 20% of our power grid that is fueled by uranium, we only supply about 4% or so of the uranium for those reactors in this country. And instead, we're getting 96% of it imported from elsewhere. So there are some things afoot that are specifically going to give a great assistance to the U.S. industry and U.S.-based producers. And also helping things along is that Cameco and the Kazakhstan state company, as you pointed out, are really throwing down a gauntlet to the utilities who think that they are going to wait out uranium producers and get them to sell them uranium for peanuts, and in some cases below the cost of putting these things into production. And God bless them that Cameco and Kazakhstan both said, you know what, we'll cut production and say, you know, go to you know where if you think we're going to let contracts roll off that are in the mid-50s and sell you uranium for something close to spot price, which is completely unrealistic. So they're really, in the end, with these moves, not only shoring up the market, Corey, but they're going to force the hands of the utilities to get them to come and deal more reasonably and realize that utility companies are not the uranium companies are not the United Way or the Salvation Army. They need to make money, too.
Yeah, it is very interesting to see the moves that these two major players in the uranium sector are doing. But maybe I want you to follow up on what Joe Mazumdar had to say, is that when you do see these major companies make these kind of decisions, when you understand the cost to shutting these projects down or pulling back production, first of all, you have to think that these companies are thinking that this lower price is going to remain for at least a little while longer to justify these costs and slowing down production.
I would differ with the last part of that comment, Corey. It's costing Cameco a pretty good chunk of change to take MacArthur Lake and keep it on care and maintenance and still have a crew there to keep everything to where 10 months hence, if that is the final target date, they're able to bring it back online. But here's the issue. There's an industry group that advises utilities, and they have put it into the heads of purchasers of uranium from utilities that they can wait out the producers and get them to come down on prices. Because for the most part, when you look, and I'm just throwing a number out there that's probably close to correct, but most long-term contracts that are being sold into, even right now, are in the $50 to $55 a pound category, which is way below the $100 plus per pound uranium price of a while ago, but well above the spot price, which was under 20 for a while. Now, after these announcements, it's back up. It's been around 25 bucks, give or take, a little bit recently. Nothing is going to be sold for $25 a pound long term. And yet, a lot of these utilities have had it put into their heads that they're going to be able to do something close to this price. And I think the Cameco, particularly, is going to the expense that it is, because it sees the possibility of sooner rather than later getting the message through to these utility companies that, you know what, there isn't anybody that is going to sell, enter new long-term contracts for $25 or even $30 a pound. You look at most projects in the world, and there are some big exceptions of some low-cost ones, including in Kazakhstan, but and really, you look at Cameco's higher grade properties, and you know the production costs are lower than what is normal. But long term, when you want to have a healthy marketplace and a healthy uranium sector, really the bottom line for a lot of these companies is $38 or $40 a pound. And it seems as though there's been this Mexican standoff of sorts that the utilities want to try and wear down these companies so that in desperation they sell production. Well, you know what? The two biggest fish in the world just told utilities, no, it ain't going to happen. We're going to prove to you that it's not going to happen. So get that notion out of your head and let's all be real here. And really, time is going to be on their side and on the side of the juniors who have survived this. And there's some astonishing opportunities there, Corey, because, you know, people thought that when precious metals went down a while back, a lot of juniors dropped like flies. If you did the numbers, you're probably talking about 80 to 90% of the companies 6 or 8 years ago that were exporting for uranium. They're gone. There's not many left. And the ones that survived are ones that you need to look at.
Okay, Chris, really quick to wrap it up, does that mean that you're focusing on some of the juniors? You might be telling some of your subscribers to be taking positions in that sector within uranium?
Well, I've already got a couple of individual names that I think have been among the best. I'm going to be adding one or two more. Plus, I have told people to put a little bit more money a while ago, and it was at a lower price in the ETF that covers the whole sector, which is a Global X Uranium ETF. URA is a symbol.
Okay, well, Chris, some interesting comments. Uranium, again, is a sector that we're seeing some moves on the supply side, but I do agree with you and kind of your initial comments that we do definitely still need to see some sort of a demand pickup. But, hey, that would cause an even better market for uranium because right now it is still very much at the bottom part of its range. Chris, thanks for your time, and everybody, appreciate tuning in for the first hour. Enjoy the second hour of the show.
For our upcoming appearance schedule, visit kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back in just a moment.
People search the internet for everything, including you. With a few clicks, information from your past can be quickly discovered, from business deals gone wrong to misleading reviews, negative articles, and unflattering images. Studies show 78% of people search for someone online before doing business with them. Will they find the real you? With ReputationDefender.com, you can establish a positive internet presence. ReputationDefender.com pioneered the field with over a decade of experience, serving thousands of successful individuals and businesses. We use patented, award-winning systems to boost positive content and suppress negative material. Don't let the internet define you. Take control of your reputation today with ReputationDefender.com. For your quick, free reputation analysis, call 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771, 800-831-0771, or visit ReputationDefender.com.
Fully cooked, ready-to-eat bacon. I'm talking thick, meaty, center-cut, presidential bacon. Savory and delicious. I buy some, I use some, I store some. Awesome. No refrigeration needed with a 10-year shelf life. NASA pack technology. Bacon. Fully cooked, fully hydrated, ready-to-eat right from the pack bacon. Or warm and serve. Life-saving, ready-to-eat bacon. 10-year shelf life bacon. Ships free at fullycookedbacon.com. Fullycookedbacon.com.
If you or someone you care about loves outdoor adventure, then check out Slingbow.com for some unique holiday gift ideas.
That's slingbow.com, where we have some innovative new products for the archer, hunter, or bow fishing enthusiast in your family. Now through January, use the promo code HOLIDAY to get free shipping in the U.S. or Canada. And from all of us at Slingbow Industries, have a safe, joyous, and peaceful holiday season.